Welcome to the dark and foreboding realm of cryptids, ghosts, and other mysteries, known as the Within the Mist podcast. We are your guides through this shadowed world, Gary and Goldie Ann, ready to delve into the unknown depths. Good morning, Goldie Ann.
Good morning, Gary.
And how are you today?
Pretty good. You decided to do this one bright and early, didn't you?
Well, we have a busy schedule. Yeah. In fact, you're on your way to another paranormal encounter at the Heard Opera House?
Yes. Meeting up again with Feeling Paranormal, and we're going to do another investigation because it's just so active. It's always great to communicate with the ghosts that you know are going to answer.
And if we find anything, or even if we don't find anything, please be sure to check our YouTube channel or social media, as Goldie Ann will have something to post about her findings there tonight. Also, in regards to announcements, we're getting closer and closer to the release of my first full-length fictional novel, Cry of the Owl. Yes, the last beta reader, friend and published author, Scott Donnelly, has sent me his opinions. He said he really liked it, and he pointed out a few things to tweak. So once I do those, then it's get it submitted up to Amazon and await their period of checking it, and then they will release it for purchase. So hopefully next week I will have a definitive date of when it'll be available on Amazon.
And guys, this book is good. And I know I'm biased, but I'm really not biased because I also wrote books. And every time I read it, it was like, I just wish I could write like this.
I hope everyone else has the same opinion. So please be ready. Check it out. I really want you to enjoy this book. Also, Goldie Ann, I want you to enjoy my upcoming riddle.
Okay. At least you told me this time to be ready.
Well, I want you to get your thinking cap on because I see you have a cup of coffee in your hand.
Yes.
So, Goldie Ann, when do ghosts drink coffee?
This sounds like it should be easy. I don't know.
In the morning.
God. No, I wouldn't have ever gone there. I was looking for something that was like boo.
Well, if you enjoyed that, please know that today's episode delves into the cursed history of a mountain tunnel, where the darkness hides tortured souls of those who perished during the tragic mining excavation. They are said to linger there still, their agonized screams echoing through the dark depths for all eternity. We are storytellers of cryptids, ghosts, and other mysteries. We don't intend to scare our listeners on purpose. Well, maybe just a little. Listener discretion is always advised. But first, a word from our sponsor. Welcome back. And so we begin in the early 1800s. Engineers in America worked tirelessly to create a connection between Boston's northeastern area and the upstart districts of New York City. This ambitious project required digging a 5-mile tunnel directly under the Hoosac Mountain. Construction on the tunnel began in 1851, but it was plagued by one disaster after another. It ended up being a long and challenging journey, with hundreds of miners working tirelessly to break through the rugged rock of the mountain. Their only tools of the time were crude black powder, picks, and shovels. Finally, the tunnel was finished after 24 years and $21 million spent. But this tunnel was more than just a physical connection between towns. It was a cursed passage, a gateway to the supernatural that earned it the ominous title of the Bloody Pit. Over time, countless lives were lost in its depths, not only from collapses and the lack of ventilation, but also from unexplainable disappearances. Over its decades of construction, 193 men have entered and never returned alive. It is said their screams still echo through the dark and twisted corridors. As each life was claimed, the tunnel grew more assertive, its hunger for souls insatiable. There may be a dark, foreboding presence that lingers in the depths of this 5-mile tunnel. This cursed path still sees heavy freight traffic despite its haunting reputation. The air is thick with an otherworldly chill, and the sounds of screaming echo off the walls as the tracks are used. This tunnel is one of the longest in North America, and still one of the most haunted places on Earth, where lost souls roam and unspeakable horrors await those who dare to venture inside. So join us today as we take a ride within the mists of Massachusetts to explore the Hoosac Tunnel.
That's awesome.
I know you're used to haunted houses and haunted buildings. Have you had any experience with a haunted cave or natural phenomenon?
No. This sounds promising.
Oh, good. Well, Chapter 1, Revenge. In 1865, volatile nitroglycerin was unleashed upon America. The discovery of its explosive powder harnessed to carve through the impenetrable walls of the Hoosac Tunnel. The workers made remarkable progress with it, but at a high cost. For every explosion that blasted through the stubborn rock and clay, lives were at risk in the aftermath. As the deafening blast echoed through the tunnel, it was only a matter of time before the first fatal accident occurred, forever staining this groundbreaking technology with blood. It was on the once peaceful afternoon of March 20th, 1865, that the world was shattered by the thunderous sound of an explosion. Three figures, Ned Brinkman, Billy Nash, and Ringo Kelly, all stood at the mouth of the dark tunnel, their faces set in determination as they prepared to test out this latest and most deadly explosive compound known to man. The key to destruction laid in a wooden crate before them, its deceptively small size belying the immense power contained within. With steady hands, they set off the fuse and retreated towards the safety bunker, never expecting the destruction that would soon follow. The ground shook and debris rained down, but only one figure emerged unscathed while the merciless blast consumed the other two. Brinkman and Nash never made it out.
Wow.
It seems Kelly's impulsive decision had triggered the charge prematurely, unleashing the deafening explosion that sent tons of rocks cascading down upon his co-workers. The once lively and bustling scene was now buried in an instant, lives ending by the crushing weight of the earth. When silence descended, it was only broken by the faint echoes of screams and cries for help. Kelly stood frozen in shock, surrounded by the devastation and death caused by his own reckless actions. He could only feel regret, knowing he would have to live with the tragedy for the rest of his life. But that wouldn't be for long. After the incident, Kelly's demeanor shifted drastically. He became a solitary figure, withdrawn and constantly on edge. His once confident posture was replaced with constant fidgeting and paranoid glances over his shoulder, always scanning for signs of danger. Even among his colleagues, he couldn't shake the feeling of unseen figures lurking in the shadows, following him like vengeful spirits through the narrow confines of the Hoosac Tunnel. And when he was left alone, sinister whispers seemed to echo around him, their eerie voices taunting and tormenting him without mercy and without end. The fear that consumed Kelly was tangible, emanating off of him in waves like a suffocating aura. Several days later, Kelly disappeared altogether, and no one could explain where the man had gone. It wasn't until March 30th, 1866, that his body was discovered, lying lifeless 2 miles within the dark and eerie tunnel. It was on the exact spot where Brinkman and Nash had met their tragic demise. Upon closer inspection, the evidence pointed to a brutal murder by strangulation. The victim's neck was marked with deep bruising and finger-shaped imprints, indicating a fierce struggle for life.
Wow.
Every inch of the man's skin was pale and clammy, starkly contrasting the bright red marks around his throat. There was no doubt. Kelly had been mercilessly strangled to death. And so, in the early hours of the morning, Deputy Sheriff Charles F. Gibson arrived at the scene of this grisly murder. The lifeless body still lay sprawled on the ground, and the sheriff estimated the time of death between midnight and 3:30 a.m.
How much an hour?
A thorough investigation was carried out. Still, with no viable suspects or leads, the brutal murder remained unsolved, haunting the construction project like a dark specter. So, with shaking hands, the workmen could feel the vengeful spirits of Brinkman and Nash still lingering in the air, a malevolent energy pulsating through the caves. There was a chill that crept as they came to a horrifying conclusion. These otherworldly beings had brutally murdered Kelly in an act of revenge for their deaths. As the miners ventured deeper into the darkness, the lights flickered and dimmed with each step, barely illuminating the claustrophobic darkness surrounding them. They began to encounter strange, shadowy figures lurking just beyond the reach of their flickering lanterns. These mysterious beings emitted eerie, guttural sounds, as if in constant anguish or agony. Occasionally, a blood-curdling scream would pierce through the walls, breaking up the silence and terrifying awe. The superstitious train workers refused to enter, convinced that a curse had befallen the place, and many chose to abandon their jobs altogether. Even brave visitors trembled with unease as they ventured inside the oppressive darkness, surrounded by slimy walls covered in never-ending streams of icy water.
Wow.
Now, despite his skepticism, the foreman, Mr. Dunn, found himself turning to unlikely sources for help in stopping the spreading of the ghost stories. He always prided himself on being a rational and logical project manager, but as the stories grew more sinister, he couldn't ignore the nagging feeling in his gut that something genuinely supernatural was at play. Reluctantly, he contacted local clergymen and scholars for their insights and advice, hoping they could provide some solution to get the workers back on the job before it was too late. Paul Travers, a mechanical engineer who had also served as a highly regarded cavalry officer in the Civil War, was hired to work on the Hoosac project, and on one occasion accompanied Mr. Dunn on a tour of the tunnel. In a letter to his sister in Connecticut dated September 8, 1868, the skilled engineer's words were precise and deliberate, carefully choosing to convey his thoughts and emotions regarding the Hoosac Tunnel. He wrote, "The men constantly complain of hearing a man's voice cry out in agony and refuse to enter the great shaft after nightfall. Mr. Dunn has reassured them time and time again that the strange sound is nothing more than the wild wind sweeping down off the mountainside. Our work has slowed to the point where Mr. Dunn asked me to help him investigate the matter. Last night, he and I entered the great tunnel at exactly 9 o'clock p.m. We traveled around 2 miles into the shaft and then stopped to listen. As we stood there in the cold silence, we both heard what truly sounded like a man groaning out in pain. As you know, I've heard this same sound many times during the war. Yet, when we turned up the wicks on our lamps, there were no other human beings in the shaft except Mr. Dunn and myself. I'll admit, I haven't been this frightened since Shiloh. Mr. Dunn agreed that it wasn't the wind we heard. Perhaps Nash or Brinkman, I wonder.
Wow, that's awesome. Is there some place we can go?
Hoosac Tunnel still exists. It's still a freight line.
Cool. Well, I guess it wouldn't be cool if a train came through while we were in there.
That would be bad.
Let me rethink this.
Well, let me continue.
Okay.
Chapter 2, Fumes and Water. Exactly 30 days later, as if on cue, October 17th, 1868, brought about the most catastrophic event in the history of the Hoosac Tunnel. 13 weary miners toiled at the deep bottom of a central shaft, their muscles aching and exhausted from hours of backbreaking work. The only light source in the dark, suffocating cave was a flickering candle perched precariously on the hoist, its feeble glow casting an uncanny shadow on the damp stone walls around them. Tragically, the flame ignited a leaking fume of a naphtha gasometer lamp. It engulfed a narrow space in an explosive fireball. The deafening roar and scorching heat seemed to consume everything in its path, threatening to turn these 13 brave workers into mere ash instantly.
Jeez.
The ground shook violently around them, and the deafening roar of the collapsing walls and crushing debris drowned out their cries for help. Panic set in as the survivors frantically clawed through the rubble, desperate to escape the suffocating darkness closing in around them. Time seemed to stand still as they realized the true horror of their situation. To be trapped deep within the bowels of a merciless mountain collapsing upon them.
Yeah, that's not terrifying at all.
Then there was an explosion that rocked the mine, sending destruction down the 583-foot deep shaft.
Jeez.
13 workers were trapped under the falling debris in suffocating smoke.
Wow.
The lucky ones were crushed instantly, their charred bodies buried under the massive chunks of smoldering wreckage. For those who survived, their fate was even more cruel as they struggled to breathe amongst the scorching heat and choking darkness. Mallory, a young, brave miner, was lowered into the depths of this dark shaft by a flimsy basket and rope. His heart pounded as he searched desperately for signs of life amidst the rubble and darkness. But suddenly, he was struck by the noxious fumes that threatened to suffocate him. After a few minutes, his comrades frantically pulled him back up to the surface, where he gasped for air and uttered the words in defeat.
No hope.
Wow.
With a trembling voice, he admitted to his managers that there were no survivors. All of the bodies had disappeared without a trace, leaving behind only emptiness and a sense of impending doom. The young miner wrung his hands nervously as he struggled to explain where they could have gone, fear weighing heavily on every word. The tunnel then became known, and still is, the Bloody Pit.
Oh, jeez. Wow.
Well, with no functioning pumping station, the 538-foot shaft became a watery grave for the trapped miners below. The walls of the tunnel were soon caked with a thick layer of murky water, concealing the mangled and bloated bodies that floated to the surface.
You know what's crazy is I just watched an episode yesterday of Expedition X, and they were at Niagara Falls, you know, checking that out.
Sure.
And yeah, there's some lot of activity down in those tunnels, right next to the whirlpool where all the bodies would end up. Been over 5,000 since the 1800s.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, here we have a cave that has 13 souls in it. And in fact, draining this site took months of painstaking effort, as each day brought more horrors to light. Waterways that came out of the mountain were a macabre conveyor belt, carrying away the remains of those who lost their lives in this hellish place. Over a year had passed, but one last grisly discovery turned even the most starworth stomachs. As the last remaining bodies were found huddled together on a makeshift raft, floating in the murky waters that had consumed them. It seems that they had survived the first explosion. They had tried to escape the initial explosion by descending deeper into the dark depths of the mineshaft, only to find themselves trapped with no way back up. As they clung desperately to their makeshift vessel, the fetid air grew thick with the toxic fumes of the naphtha gas, slowly suffocating them as they struggled in vain against the unending surge of water. Any cries for help were silenced by the heavy silence of death, leaving behind only the reminder of their last few hours as they struggled for survival.
So sad.
As the search for the missing miners continued, eerie rumors began to spread amongst the villagers nearby. Some claimed to have seen ghostly figures near the flooded pit, while others swore they heard faint cries in the wind. The workers themselves were divided. Some believed they saw their lost comrades marching through the thick fog at the entrance to the mountain. The ghostly apparitions would materialize from the swirling snow, their pale forms flickering in and out of existence. And just as quickly as they appeared, they vanished without a trace, no footprints, and only unanswered cries.
Wow.
The haunting apparitions disappeared instantly once the raft-bound miners were finally discovered. The solemn ceremony of a decent burial was enough to appease their vengeful spirits. However, there are some who still hear the wails and moans of those that refused to rest until justice was served for their untimely death. 4 years after this devastating gas explosion, a Dr. Clifford J. Owen, a seasoned drilling operations superintendent with deep creases etched into his weathered face, made the arduous journey back to the site of the catastrophe. With him, a young colleague, James R. McKinstry, walked beside him, quietly taking notes. After completing their inspection of the shaft, Dr. Owen sat in front of a typewriter and wrote a detailed account of the disaster, which was later published in a prominent Michigan newspaper. He wrote, "On the night of June 25, 1872, James McKinstry and I entered the great excavation precisely at 11:30 p.m. We had traveled about 2 full miles into the shaft when we finally halted to rest. Except for the dim, smoky light cast by our lamps, the place was as cold and dark as a tomb. James and I stood there talking for about a minute or two and were just about to turn back when suddenly I heard a strange, mournful sound. It was just as if someone or something was suffering great pain. The next thing I saw was a dim light coming along the tunnel from a westerly direction. At first, I believed it was probably a workman with a lantern. Yet, as the light grew closer, it took on a strange blue color and appeared to change shape, almost into the form of a human being without a head. The light seemed to be floating along about a foot or two above the tunnel floor. In the next instant, it felt as if the temperature had suddenly dropped,
and a cold, icy chill ran up and down my spine. The headless form came so close that I could have reached out and touched it, but I was too terrified to move.
Yeah.
For what seemed like an eternity, McKinstry and I just stood there, gaping at the headless thing like two wooden Indians. The blue light remained motionless for a few seconds, as if it were actually looking us over, then floated off towards the east end of the shaft and vanished into thin air. I am, above all, a realist, nor am I prone to repeating gossip and wild tales that defy a reasonable explanation. However, in all truths, I cannot deny what James McKinstry and I witnessed with our own eyes.
So now you have a blue ghost, a headless ghost, roaming the tunnels.
Wow. I mean, I like ghost stories, but this is kind of...
extra creepy?
Yeah. Extra sad.
This tunnel, it has a very sad history.
Yeah.
And even worse, Chapter 3, Nowhere is Safe. Terrifying occurrences plagued the entire project. Their supernatural origins even extended beyond the confines of the tunnel shaft. With the memory of the headless entity still haunting them, terror struck again 3 months later. October 16, 1874 marked the fateful disappearance of a Frank Webster, a seasoned hunter who knew these woods like the back of his hand.
Frank, where'd you go, buddy? Can't find you.
Well, panic spread amongst the terrified workers as rumors of a malevolent force lurked in the shadows of the mountain spread. What horrors lied waiting for those who dared to enter the tunnel, let alone the surrounding woods. 3 days passed before a search party finally stumbled upon the hunter, barely recognizing him as a human being. He crawled along the murky banks of the Deerfield River, his body trembling in shock and his mind consumed by terror. Webster claimed that he had been hunting deer in the forest when he swore he heard the voices of souls calling out to him in the forest. Despite being afraid, he followed the cries through the gnarled trees and into the gaping maw of the Hoosac Tunnel. Inside, his heart thundered as he saw ghostly figures wandering about in the dim light, their ghostly frames still working tirelessly on the unyielding rock. The silence was deafening, and the dull thud of pickaxes striking stone was missing. No matter how loud he screamed, the spectral workers remained oblivious to his presence, lost in their endless tasks. Then, without no warning, an invisible force seized the hunting rifle from his grasp. It swung it with relentless force, smashing into his head and knocking him unconscious.
What the heck?
The blow landed with a sickening thud, and he felt the world spin as he faded into darkness.
Now we have a violent ghost. That's kind of weird.
A lot of the miners felt that the ghosts were upset and vengeful due to their violent deaths.
I don't think I've ever encountered a violent ghost.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Well, poor Webster, because his head felt like it had been split open by a sledgehammer, and his body had crumpled to the ground and completely at the mercy of the unseen attacker. It was when the search team stumbled upon the hunter, they were met with his harrowing sight. He was weaponless and trembling, his memory almost wiped clean of how he exited the dark tunnel. His battered body bore the angry bruises and deep bleeding gashes, proof that a vengeful force had brutally assaulted him without mercy. The year pressed on amidst the harrowing tales of ghostly sightings and unrelenting attacks. So finally, after 24 long years of construction, the momentous day arrived, February 9th, 1875, when the first train made its way through the newly built tunnel. And with that, the North Adams entrance became known as the Western Gateway, solidifying its place as a crucial point of entry to much of New England. Despite the completion of the tunnel, terrifying encounters continued to occur. One case is that of Harlan Mulvaney, who gripped the reins of his horse-drawn wagon tightly as he navigated the bumpy dirt road towards the Hoosac Tunnel. There was a heavy scent of pine filling the air as he approached the tunnel, where a group of workers were waiting for his delivery of timber in order to repair the damaged wooden supports. As Mulvaney made his way into the entrance, he was greeted by his fellow maintenance team members. They all waved in friendly recognition as he passed by, their lanterns casting a warm glow to the dimly lit tunnel. Excited chatter filled the air as they gathered their tools and prepared to follow him further into the tunnel depths to begin their work. Before they had made it far into the entrance, their excitement turned to shock as they watched the wagon come barreling towards them, seemingly escaping from the darkness within. The wagon was careening out of the entrance and down the bumpy road, seemingly out of control. The horses were in a frenzy, running faster and faster with each passing moment. Mulvaney's fear was evident on his face, and he was whipping at the horses in a mixture of terror and determination, as if he was being chased by the devil himself. He needed to get away, but at what cost?
I think he was being chased by the devil.
Well, days passed, and the search for the missing wagon and its owner, Mulvaney, seemed to have reached a dead end. But then, a local hunter stumbled upon a clearing deep in the forest, 3 miles from where the wagon was last seen. In the center of the clearing stood an abandoned wagon, its horses grazing peacefully nearby. Upon closer inspection, the hunters noticed Mulvaney's coat and pipe lying discarded on his seat, as if he had hastily left it in a hurry. The woods seemed to hold on to secrets, but it was clear that something had happened. Mulvaney himself had vanished without a trace. No one has seen him since that fateful day, and whatever happened to him remains a mystery, his fate unknown to all who tirelessly searched for him.
So it just disappeared.
Completely.
That's weird.
So it sounds like whatever chased him out of the tunnel caught him.
Huh. That's really weird. I'm not used to hearing about vengeful ghosts.
Well, the Hoosac Tunnel is full of them.
Wow.
But there is some good. Chapter 4, The Guardian Angel of the Tunnel.
Oh. Here we go.
Well, not all of the tales surrounding the ghosts of the Hoosac Tunnel are filled with sorrow and loss. There is some that carry the faint whispers of hope and redemption, while others hold remnants of joy and laughter that linger in the shadows. These phantoms have a range of emotions, just like the living, and stories reflect the complexities of the human experience, even in death. Joseph Impoco, an elderly man with a lifetime of stories etched into his weathered face, was once a loyal Boston and Maine Railroad employee. He began working for the railroad at the tender age of 18, eager to make a living and find his place in the world.
Just a baby.
Very much so. And little did he know, he would soon become intertwined with the legendary tales that still haunt those of today.
Don't tell me he's going to die too.
Do you want me to continue reading?
Yes.
According to Joseph, it was the tunnel ghost that saved his life on not just one, but two occasions.
Yeah, he seemed a little too good. Don't want him to die.
Well, in an article from October 30th, 1977, in the Berkshire Sampler, Impoco shared with the reporter the encounters he had while working on the tracks. One occasion, he was chipping away at the frozen ice. A sudden gust of wind brushed against his ear. There was a deep, gravelly voice that seemed to whisper, "Run, Joe, run."
I would run.
While every nerve in his body prickled with a sense of danger, he stopped what he was doing and scanned his surroundings. Yet no one was in sight.
That would freak me out.
It did him as well. And the oppressive sensation of being watched continued to grip him, his skin crawling with unease. The hairs on the back of his neck seemed to rise higher and higher, as if warning him of some impending doom. Like a bolt of lightning, an unseen force crashed into the railroad worker's chest, launching him backwards with bone-shattering force.
Jeez.
He tumbled to the ground, heart racing as he frantically tried to make sense of what had just hit him with such a brutal impact. Then, the earth trembled beneath him as he fought to get to his feet, terrified of what other unworldly powers might be at play. It was almost instantly his head snapped to the side, and he caught sight of an unexpected blur around the bend. It wasn't until it was almost upon him that he realized that the number 60 engine train was barreling down the track at an alarming velocity, creating a symphony of sound as it thundered closer and closer. Impoco recalled, "Boy, did I jump back. When I looked, there was no one there." Impoco recalled that he had been saved by the ghost. And the worker's life flashed before his eyes in a split second as the warning whistle blared and the train barreled towards him. His heart raced and he felt a gust of wind from the locomotive rush past him, inches away from certain death. With a sense of relief washing over him as he realized he had narrowly escaped a fatal collision, he looked up at the looming train, its massive wheels against the tracks, and shuddered at how close he had come to meeting his demise.
Wow.
From that moment on, he made a promise always to heed any warnings and never take his safety for granted again.
Good job.
Well, after 6 long weeks, Impoco found himself once again toiling alone on the tracks. The bitter cold of winter clung to the worker's skin as he worked tirelessly, using a sturdy iron crowbar to break free the freight cars that were trapped on the icy tracks. The wind whipped through his hair, stinging his cheeks as he strained against the metal. With each forceful thrust of the crowbar, his muscles burned with exertion, and his breath turned to mist in the frigid air. But he was determined and would only give up once every freight car was broken free and could continue on with their journey. It was then a voice suddenly pierced through the winter air, demanding attention with its urgency and familiarity. "Joe! Joe!" it called out desperately, the sound coming from all directions, echoing off the surrounding buildings and trees. "Drop it, Joe!" Even though the speaker could not be seen, the words were as clear as if the person had been standing beside him, urging him to let go of whatever he was holding on to so tightly.
Huh.
Without hesitation, his instincts kicked in and he dropped the cold metal crowbar he had been holding. But just as quickly, the crowbar jolted from his grasp and was thrown violently against the rough rock wall of the tunnel. 11,000 volts of electricity surged through the metal tracks and through the metal crowbar.
Damn.
Sparking and crackling in an otherworldly display. It seems a short-circuited overhead power line had fallen onto the tracks nearby, sizzling with danger and potential disaster. The hum of electricity filled the train worker's ears, drowning out all other sounds and leaving him frozen in fear and awe at the raw power before him. Impoco's life had been spared for a second time by the mysterious spirit that seemed to reside within the depths of the Hoosac Tunnel. The train worker could feel the presence of something otherworldly, protecting him from harm.
So these aren't necessarily all of them are vengeful. We have the helpful ones too.
Well, you, as I said, you have so many deaths in within the tunnel. You're going to get a variety of opinions and emotions from the spirits.
True.
Chapter 5, Ghost Hunters.
Woo! Yay!
I figured this chapter would interest
you.
That's me! Okay, you keep that in mind, all right?
Okay.
The 1970s brought a surge of interest in the tunnel as its haunting stories spread through national newspapers. Thrill-seeking researchers and brave paranormal investigators braved the dark, dank depths armed with recording equipment and cameras. They were determined to capture the undeniable proof of the Hoosac Tunnel's existent ghosts. Eager...
Yep. Go ahead. Sorry. I was just going to say, me and Tiffany aren't scared of anything.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll let you think that.
All right.
Their eager footsteps would echo off the walls, drowned out only by their racing hearts pounding with anticipation. In 1973, a daring 55-year-old man named Bernard Hastaba boldly proclaimed that he would embark on a journey to walk the entire 5-length-mile tunnel to prove its existence of ghosts as a mere legend.
Wow.
With determination glinting in his eyes and a backpack slung over his shoulder, he set out to traverse the winding path of the Hoosac Tunnel, with his ultimate destination being Greenfield, where his relatives resided. This act would be a physical challenge and a test of willpower and conviction in the face of skepticism. And so, with each step, Bernhard bravely marched forward, intent on reaching his destination and proving the doubters wrong. While a small group of curious onlookers were watching, he stepped into the dark, foreboding tunnel entrance at the North Adams. Silence enveloped him as he disappeared further and further into the depths, leaving behind the safety of the outside world. Inky blackness swallowed him, and his fate unknown to those who watched from the entrance. As the hours ticked by, he failed to resurface.
Uh-oh.
Frantic whispers of fear and dread soon began to spread amongst his family. It was clear that he had bravely entered the cursed tower, but never returned again, haunting every person with thoughts of what could have possibly happened within the 5 miles of its dark depths. It was on the following day a determined rescue team painstakingly retraced his steps, their feet sinking into the soft earth with each step.
Uh-oh.
They combed through the entire area, scanning for any signs or clues suggesting what had happened to him. But the tunnel remained silent and still, offering no answers or explanations. Despite their efforts, they found nothing but stillness, leaving them with more questions than answers.
Yeah. Still, so they can make it, but he can't make it. Why?
Well, they probably came with lights and as a bunch of people. He went in there alone.
Yeah.
In 1976, Ali Allmaker, a renowned parapsychologist from Agawam, Massachusetts, also ventured into the infamous tunnel with a small team of students. Despite her expertise in paranormal phenomena, she was unprepared for what she would encounter. According to a piece written in July 6th to 12th, 1984 issue of Berkshire's Week, Allmaker was not only a philosophy professor at the North Adams State College, but also a part-time ghost hunter. She wrote, "I have been in the tunnel only once, accompanied by a railroad official, and can attest to the claim that it is an eerie place. I had the uncomfortable feeling that someone was walking closely behind me in the darkness and would tap me on the shoulder, or worse, pull me into some unknown and unspeakable horror at any moment. In the suffocating darkness, a spectral figure emerged from the shadows. its tattered work attire hung in shreds, barely clinging to its gaunt frame as it emanated an otherworldly white glow. Allmaker hesitantly approached and sought answers, but the figure passed through the solid rock face like a phantom, leaving her reeling with fear and confusion. As the deafening silence of the night pressed in on her, she struggled to process the impossible encounter that had just occurred before her very eyes. Also, according to her account, a group of curious college students ventured into the tunnel armed only with a tape recorder. With eager anticipation, they turned the machine on and left it to capture any eerie sounds that may haunt the abandoned passageway. When they returned and retrieved the recording device, their excitement turned to terror as they heard muffled human voices crying and groaning emanating from the tape.
Dang.
Still feel brave to enter the Hoosac Tunnel?
I would like to, but I mean, I don't... There's got to be a reason that they were taken. And I can't see me or Tiffany being taken. We're too nice. And we're very respectful when we investigate.
So you feel that you'd be more in line with Impoco?
Yeah.
I hope so. But for 25 grueling years, men toiled tirelessly on this massive construction project, sacrificing their blood, sweat, and even lives to bring it to fruition. As the final touches were made, haunting presences loom over the site, mercilessly terrorizing and attacking those who remain. The restless spirits of fallen comrades who had given everything for this endeavor. The builders of this bloody pit were met with an unfathomable loss, a staggering toll of human lives that still echoes within its rocky walls. Despite being in use today, with 12 freight trains passing through it on every day, it remains the most notorious and haunted tunnel in the world, a place where screams and moans can still be heard echoing through the endless darkness. This lonely and isolated region of Massachusetts hides a secret. It is a place where the dead are said to roam free after being lost deep underground. Their spirits claw for their way back to the surface, searching for answers with the living who left them behind.
So what they really need to do, since it's, you know, just freight, they need to make a passenger ghost tour train. That would be awesome.
I wonder if they ever thought about that.
They need to. Somebody out there is a big business.
Well, something for someone else to consider, but before we end this episode, I want to remind you that we are active on social media and would be thrilled to hear your opinions about the Hoosac Tunnel. Please don't hesitate to share your stories and opinions with us. You can reach us on our Facebook page, Within the Mist Podcast. We are also on Instagram and have an email at withinthemistpodcast@gmail.com for any of you who would like to share your tale. We hope you enjoyed our story about the Hoosac Tunnel. Come back next week for more about cryptids, ghosts, and other mysteries. But in the meantime, watch for spirits in train tunnels and remain constantly curious. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye, guys. Keep it creepy.